you for joining us. This is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fishery science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod. If you're the generous sort, you can be like Ben, Tyler, Janet, Robin, and John, who all support the podcast on Patreon. Through Patreon, you're able to support the show with either a recurring or one-time donation, which helps us pay for various parts of the show. If that isn't your thing, you can also purchase Fisheries Pod shirts, hoodies, stickers, and face masks on our Teespring store, if you feel inclined. So check that out. Our guest today is Dr. Ana Carolina Esteves Dias. Ana Carolina is a postdoctoral fellow for the V2V Global Partnership Initiative at the University of Waterloo, Canada. She holds a PhD in social and ecological sustainability from the University of Waterloo and a Master of Science in Ecology from the University of Campinas in Brazil. Her research emphasizes participatory and transdisciplinary approaches to coastal governance, focusing particularly on social well-being, ecosystem services, marine protected areas, governance fit, and science policy interface. Ana Carolina is a co-founder of the Socio-Ecological Co-Creation Network for Latin America, which is oriented towards developing co-creation methodologies to respond to socio-ecological challenges. She collaborates with the Research and Outreach Group on Conservation and Management of the Commons, CG Commons, University of Campinas, and is a past institutional fellow at the Brazilian National Institute for Space Research. Welcome to the podcast, Ana.
Hi, Mirella. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Ana, can you tell us more about your current research as a postdoctoral fellow with the V2V Global Partnership? What have you been focusing on and how is that important to you and our society?
Oh, yes. So V2V is a project focusing on Africa and Asian small-scale fishing communities. And the idea is to understand what are the current vulnerabilities that those fishing communities are facing, economic, ecological, social vulnerabilities, and how can we transition towards a more viable livelihoods for fishing communities. So this is a more of a big picture of how climate change, for example, impacted the life and livelihoods of local fishers. And how can we deal with that in order to foster better solutions for local livelihoods? Other situations, for example, tourism, how tourism can bring both vulnerabilities and new viabilities for local communities and many other vulnerabilities, understanding these vulnerability and viabilities more as a transition and a dynamic process. So once we tackle an issue, and once we try to deal with current vulnerabilities that might bring us new possibilities for viable livelihoods and fishing, as well as new vulnerabilities that we will have to tackle as well. So the idea is to foster positive policy change, understand how the regulations and governance processes of coastal areas as well as inland fisheries may improve and help this transition towards viable small-scale fishing communities.
I would like to hear more about your research and what you've currently been working on. So what is your study area and what is the methodology that you've been using to conduct that study?
So currently we are doing a situational analysis of the main challenges, vulnerabilities, and viabilities in 12 countries. There are 6 countries located in Asia and 6 countries located in Africa. And we are focusing on small-scale fishing, inland as well as coastal fishing. And so each country is doing their own analysis. And my role as a postdoc is to do a summary of this analysis of the countries. And this is also a collaborative process. So we are working together with the countries to understand the context. What are the key vulnerabilities in the situation of the countries themselves, and how these might be like global vulnerabilities, how some of them are more implicated in some countries rather than the others, what are general patterns of vulnerability, what are the solutions that countries are finding to transition towards more viable livelihoods and small-scale fishing. Overall, the idea is to generate information that can support policy change and can support better governance of small-scale fisheries in specific sites, as well as to have a more big picture of overview of the key factors affecting small-scale fisheries worldwide.
That's really interesting. And so as part of the V2V Global Partnership, you are connected, I'm assuming, with people from different countries and different institutions around the world. What are some of those institutions you're connected with or organizations you're connected with, and how has it been being part of a large network like that?
Yes, so this is one of the very interesting and exciting part of the project. We have partners that are universities within Canada and abroad. In each of the countries, we have partners in the universities there. We also have partners that are part of the government of each country and part of fishing communities as well. So the idea is really to bridge this scientific knowledge into more practice-oriented and bring this to the policy domain. So this is very nice that we have partners in the field that are experienced these vulnerabilities, that are leading some of the policy changes. So this is one aspect of it. We have NGOs and other research organizations as well that are part of the project, so we can have this conversation with people that are having similar type of research and share insights and have connections with other areas as well. And this is very interesting, and at the same time we have a challenge. We have people in different time zones, sometimes like 12-hour difference, so we need to coordinate and arrange meetings that suits better the schedule of people in these different regions. We need to adjust sometimes our communication process, because once we are in academia, for example, we communicate in a certain way. For example, we publish scientific papers, or we talk in conferences. So once we are dealing with people from different sectors, people from the government, people from NGOs, local fishers, this communication, we adjust, we need to be mindful that each type of organization have their own communication system. So we pay attention to that. How can we make sure that we are being able to communicate in an effective way with this broad range of partners? And these are some of the interesting parts of being part of such a huge network.
Those are really good insights, and I think that those are some of the key, I'm glad that you raised some of those points, because I feel like those are some key challenges for sure of being part of large networks for research and also engaged with communities, as the work that you've been doing for some time now. So your degrees in biology and ecology, and then you also focused on applied ecology and interdisciplinary research concerning social and environmental issues. So when was it and how did you become interested in the human and environmental interactions, especially regarding environmental governance towards social and ecological sustainability? What was it that sparked your interest, and what was that transition like from biology into more of the marine social sciences?
This is an interesting question to see how things come together. So I decided to do biology because for two reasons. One, I really like nature, and I wanted to be more involved on that. And on the other hand, I wanted to do research with people. So when I first started, I wanted to work with genetics, doing some research about disease and focusing more on the human side of it. And once I started to go to the lab, I realized that I would be happier working in the field, having some more experiences in nature itself. And I also wanted to have the human component to it. So I was interested in this human nature connections, interactions, how I went more to the conservation side. So conservation, it's all about people as well, because we are controlling or regulating people's behavior towards nature, how we use nature, how we exploit nature, so that we can still maintain the functioning of the ecosystems. And that also comes together with this idea that we also depend upon nature. So our dependency on nature may vary, and according to the different lifestyles that you may have a different idea on that connection. But I was thinking pretty much on fishing communities that they live by the coast. They live off of fishing most of the time, sometimes household agriculture. So how these people that are dependent on their daily life upon natural resources are affected by conservation approaches that are more nationwide, or that are more concerned about big impacts on the environment. So once I started doing research, it was during the undergrad, I did this research on how protected the areas they use scientific knowledge, if they do or if they don't, and what are the challenges for that in coming up with conservation strategies. And I got into this understanding that there are lots of studies and a lot of work towards conservation, but the language is very hard once you are in the government or in the management system of the protected area, because the language there is different. So we need to understand and negotiate how the knowledge from academia has been translated into some practical work. So this was part of how I got into interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary work. And then from there, I started a master's in ecology, human ecology, to deal with these issues and conflicts between local people and protected areas. And in the master's, I focused more on developing a monitoring program, either both ecological and social and economic. So monitoring what is the implication of fisheries to local environment, and what is the importance of fishing to local communities, thinking about social importance and economic importance. So trying to grab this contextual component and more holistic approach on how conservation strategies are important and may help to protect the environment, but what are the implications to specific sectors that are extremely dependent upon those natural resources. And then from there, governance started to be a very helpful umbrella to understand all the species. And then on the PhD, I started to focus more on governance of marine protected areas, as well as how areas or coastal areas that are inside protected areas is very important to the well-being of coastal communities. So pretty much this how the pieces came together, but it's very interesting to see how it makes sense in the thinking that once you're dealing with people, you're dealing with conservation, how they come up together, their policy, their tourism sector, their very different sectors, and how they communicate and negotiate together. So all these things are very interesting in the governance domain, and the governance came up as a very interesting tool to help to understand and depict this complexity.
That's a very interesting trajectory, and it's really cool to see how, as you said, how all these pieces come together and to where you are today. It's very impressive. So what are some of the things that you would still like to understand through your research in future projects? And where do you want to get? What is your main goal moving forward now?
So moving forward, I want to understand how these negotiation processes work. What are the implications of understanding that they're the different conflicting interests. So for example, once you create very big economic development goals, there are implications for minority groups, and at what extent these minority groups can raise their voice or will be heard in decision-making arenas when compared to other forces. So I think this dynamic of negotiation and also bringing to the discussion, bringing to the table the importance of coastal resources to local people as to different dimensions of well-being. social well-being, because, for example, if you're going out fishing, that is related to the social dynamics, family dynamics. It's also related to how one perceives themselves. That is related to subjective well-being, for example. What is the life goal of those people that live by the coast that might be different from those people that are creating the rules and regulations on how the natural resources can be used and exploited? So I think my main interest now is to understand how can we put together all these different pieces in the negotiation arena and come up with more viable local livelihoods, as well as thinking about development in the region. How can we integrate and coordinate these different interests?
Yes, I like how you mentioned this really important piece of communication and of also bringing fishers to the discussion and bringing them to the arena, as you're mentioning. So what are some of the lessons that you've learned over the years doing this kind of research in terms of bridging that gap, or in terms of increasing that communication amongst different actors, but also in terms of raising the voices and of small-scale fishers and making sure that they're also heard?
Yes, so there are many learnings and many things to be learned still, but I would like to focus here on a few things. So first, once you're dealing with people, we have our research agenda, for example, but it can be a sharing process. So once you arrive in a community and you can present your research, you can make agreement and you can understand if this research will be helpful to the local people or not, or how can you make the research also be interesting for them. So you can shape your research in a way that you have some flexibility to contribute to the local context. So this is something that I really appreciate about the transdisciplinary type of research, where you are doing your research or doing your scientific contribution, but you're also thinking about a practical contribution to the field and to the people that are working with you. So this is one of my major learnings so far. Second, there is no absolute truth when dealing with small-scale fishing communities, conservation, and development, because there are so many different interests at the same time that it's very important to understand that there is no absolute conservation or there is no absolute exploitation that will work for the long term. So these things has to be negotiated in a way that it will be sustainable in the long run, and at the same time that people can have their goals or their own interests still preserved. And this requires a lot of committing or a lot of negotiating in a way that you might get a good result, thinking about the different interests.
Yeah, I do see this came up a lot when you were talking about transitioning throughout your trajectory, doing different kinds of research in different communities. And that's definitely important things to keep in mind, even for those who are not specifically working with coastal communities as part of their research objectives, but also working in fishing communities and during their research there in other topics. So what is environmental stewardship to you, and why is it important, or how can we help foster it?
So for me, environmental stewardship is related to how people feel responsible for the environment they live in and they use, and that contribute to their life in different ways. So once you feel that you understand how important the environment is for you, you have your own responsibility towards it. So it's something that can help to foster conservation, for example, can help to foster local livelihoods that are in accordance or that are more related to the highly dependent on natural resources. And it is important because it's not only the government responsibility and through, for example, policies that you need to preserve nature, otherwise you get a sanction. It's more about how do you understand and how do you feel it is important for you to preserve nature in certain ways because you're dependent on that ultimately. So I think this is important that people have this understanding so they can be more conscious of their actions and what are the implications of their actions. And we can, how can we foster it? I think through this understanding that humans are at some point part of nature and humans are dependent on nature, so we are not that disconnected. So we depend upon food that comes from natural cycles. We depend on our well-being, for example, is also related to nature in some ways. So we gain a lot of enjoyment of life doing hikes or going to the beach or like different things that we do in nature. They help us to live well and live better. And we are also dependent on them on the biological side. We depend on natural resources to live. So I think somehow if we understand that, we foster this understanding, it will also help to foster stewardship, because in my mind, it's natural that we will want to preserve something that we depend upon.
And how does that connect to the concept of well-being that you've been working on as well?
Well-being, I usually focus on the idea of social well-being. So we have different dimensions of well-being. So first is material. So the idea that if you have the basic standard of living, if you have enough food, the basic resources that you need to live in a material conception, then it will help you to have a better life that is related to this idea of well-being. But it's not only that. We have also the social component. So as human beings, we need to have our social circle so that we feel safe, so that we feel included, so that we feel connected. And that in small-scale fishing, for example, this is very interesting because social interactions during fishing, once you have your crew and you go out fishing, this is very important. It is part of fishers' life and it's part of how they understand themselves as part of this fishing community. Also, a third dimension is the subjective well-being. So how happy is one person with his or her life? What are the perception of life that we have? Do we have a fulfilling life according to our own standards, our own perception of what a good life is? So we have these three different dimensions. The material one, if you have the basic standards of living, the social, how included, how connected, also a bit related to cultural norms. And finally, a more individual perception of life, if you are achieving it, if you are pursuing it. So I think that this understanding or stewardship is also related to how much you understand, how much being in nature helps you and to have a good life and helps different dimensions of your own well-being. And then naturally, it's a process that it is important to understand that it is important for you to live well. So the stewardship will be improved or it will be helped or fostered.
Thank you for explaining those concepts so well and connecting them. So I really like this idea of human well-being depending on nature and nature being affected by human actions. And I feel like, I don't know what your perspective on it is, but I feel like this has been more and more clear, perhaps with climate change and how changes in nature, in our oceans, are really going to affect humans and also being in detriment of their personal or human well-being. So how do you see that understanding of framing humans and nature as two subsystems of the same social ecological system? How does that help us understand not only environmental governance, but also change in the context of climate change or in the context of change in general?
Yeah, so I think this idea that humans, the flow the flow between these two subsystems, as you put it. So it's that human actions, they affect the environment, and changes in the environment affect human well-being. So I think this is like this dynamic that help us to understand how much our actions will change the environment that we live on and we depend upon, and how much of these changes will in turn affect the well-being of people. So I think understanding like this, how these subsystems are connected, will help us to understand that climate change, there's some natural components to it, but there's a lot of anthropogenic components to it as well. So if we can manage the anthropogenic components to it, and we can reduce, for example, gas emission, or we can reduce human impact on that, then we will sustain a better environment for the planet, for other species, but also for us to live in, to sustain an environment that we support our living standards. So I think understanding more these connections and how much we can manage our own behaviors in order to protect nature as it is, and that it will keep continuing helping us to survive well, as well as understanding that the planet is a process, and we are part of it. I think this understand will help us to deal with the changes, and to understand what are our limits, what we can do, and what are our limits in controlling natural cycles, but that we are also part of it. So I think this is a helpful way to put it.
Yeah, thank you, Anna, for making that connection with climate change as well, and that understanding of humans and nature as part of the same system. So how do you envision the future of small-scale fisheries in coastal communities around the world as we enter the international year of small-scale fisheries in 2022? And what should fishery scientists keep in mind in that scenario while conducting their research on fish, fisheries, and ecosystems?
So I think I envision a bit of change, for example, livelihood diversification. There's a lot of tourism that have gained increasing economic importance in small-scale fishing. This has benefits as well as some setbacks. So it's another source of income, which is very important because many fishing communities is still very poor and marginalized. So this is very important as well, with the decrease of fishing stocks, overfishing. So, but at the same time, tourism has to be well managed so that it do not cause new impacts, for example, a large infrastructure or pollution. These are also concerns that we need to pay attention to. In some ways, in some areas, the culture of fishing communities, they are being fostered and appreciated. But on the other hand, in our other places, the kids of fishermen, they don't want to be fishing anymore. So there will also be some changes in there, how much the value is put on there, how much the struggles will be there. So they will have to actually move on to other economic activities. So I see some opportunities as well, as we are talking about more inclusive governance systems. So how can we hear more from fishers and understand more how they themselves envision their future, what would be interesting for them, what are their needs, are there any like education or more social structures that may be more inclusive for fishers as well, so they can have a broader portfolio or more opportunities to change their livelihoods accordingly, or according to environmental changes. Marine protected areas may also play a role in helping with dealing with reduction of fish stocks. But again, many protected areas are created but not well implemented. They can also have some crisis or conflict with fishing, depending on restrictions that they impose. So I see, again, the importance of negotiation in this manner. And we have many opportunities, but I think it's key to include fishers in this conversation to shape these opportunities in a way that makes small-scale fishing viable for the future.
That's a really good way of bringing it all together, I guess, from our conversation, and how and where we're going moving forward now, if we consider those things and if we try to include and diversify the groups that are part of the discussions on nature and in relation to our oceans in general too. So for those who haven't worked with fishing communities or with small-scale fishers, what is it like to work in fishing communities and doing the kind of research that you do? So what do you like the most about connecting with fishers, and what are some of the stories that you may have to share about over the years working with fishing communities in Ubatuba in Brazil and in other areas?
It's a very very deep learning process, I think, working communities. It's important to be open. So once you go to a different setting, even though it's the same country as you're used to, if you have experience in the country, many fishing communities, they have their own social norms, or they have their own way to respect the elderly, for example, or the leaders in the community. So once you're approaching a community, it comes a lot with this human dimension. So it brings you some emotions, or it brings you some ways. So how can you connect with people? What are the rules that you can follow? So if you can go very open-minded and open heart for understanding the local relationships, understanding how the interactions work there, I think this is one very interesting point that I learned a lot, that the value system in a small area or in a fishing community, it's of course it varies in different contexts, but we go there and we start to understand what is your role in that community as well as a researcher or an outsider? How can you make your goal also be also work with the local context, with the social relations that are already there? So how can you contribute somehow in a way that it feels more as an exchange rather than you going there and searching, grabbing information, taking outside of the community and building your research paper? So there is a lot of this sensibility on how to understand the situations, on how to be respectful towards what is happening over there, how to be respectful towards people's times, people's needs as well. So at the same time, preserving your own goal or your own personality or your own the researcher role that you also play, that you also have. So I think this is one of the key interesting points that I'd like to mention.
Thanks for sharing that, Ona. And it comes from many years of research and engaging with communities. So yeah, I'm sure you learned a lot throughout this process. And thanks for sharing all those learnings with us. So Ona, now the tough part of the interview is over and we're down to the final five questions. This is a group of five questions that I ask each of the guests that come on the show. So the first one is, what is your favorite fish?
This is a good question. I have a favorite fish. It's called robalo. But I'll have to check the name in English.
Snook, maybe?
Snook, yeah. Yeah, maybe. This is very tasty. And they usually usually go fish them in the sea mouth or in the river mouth close to the sea, and they move between the sea and the river.
Yes, they're very tasty too, for sure. And what is your favorite memory from your career or research so far?
I have many many good memories. I don't know if I can pinpoint one favorite memory, but I will tell you that once I was talking to someone that is like a tour guide at the same time as a fisher, and we were doing some stand-up paddling and talking about all these dynamics of so it started from the colonization how the fishing communities became the way they are, how the fishing village still preserve a lot of these more communal way of living that is different from the city. And we're talking about how things became the way they are. So it was very interesting to see the perspective of someone while we were there experiencing the place. So I think that was this is one of the good memories that I carry, because once you're there and you're hearing about all these stories and you're feeling it at the same time, I think this is a very rich type of memory that you can hear something and can interact with that, and you can have your own perception of that at the same time. So this is one of my favorite memories, I guess.
That's beautiful. I really like that. What is your dream job or location?
This is another good question. So I think in my dream job, I will keep developing these ideas on how can we integrate what we already know and what we do we still need to understand from the scientific standpoint, with how can you put that into practice and help foster positive change in the way that people use coastal environments and the way that coastal environments foster well-being in people. So I think I would like to keep working with research and developing research in a way that is engaging and participatory, and there is like this exchange with local people as well. So I think a job like that would be my dream job. I would say research that is open to this discussion of what is happening on the ground, what are the next directions that we can take that will make people's life better, and at the same time will bring this discussion of how people and nature, they are connected, how much nature is important for the well-being. So I think this is something that if I can do that in my job, this will be a dream job. And the location, I don't know yet, but I feel that I have this connection to coastal areas. I would like to keep working in coastal environments, maybe being based in a coastal area, but I could also keep doing research around there. So I think I have broad conceptions. I don't have one specific location to pinpoint, but I think I want to keep my connection with coastal environments as well.
Yeah, that sounds great. And if money was not an issue, what is one project that you'd like to work on?
If money was not an issue, I'd like to work on. I'd like to work on something that that is, again, this bridge between what is knowledge and how can we apply them to live better. And to live better and understand these connections that we have with nature as well. So how can we improve negotiation arenas? I have sometimes this crazy idea to link some more psychological aspects to decision making of protected areas, of environmental regulations, as well as local groups like fishing communities. For example, once people are in a good state of mind, they can understand or they can negotiate better. So these are some key points that I have in my mind. I don't have the pieces all together yet, but how can we integrate like these different things that we know, these different areas of knowledge that we know? We have environmental science, we have social sciences, and we have all these other areas that you can integrate to have a full understanding or a better understanding of how a negotiation process may be better, thinking about the different interests that we have. So something in the big picture that grabs different pieces of knowledge that we have been constructing for a long time. So this is a project that I'd like to work on in the future, and I am trying to understand it better into more details.
I would love to see you doing research on that, and it sounds very interesting and exciting too. If there was one point or principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would that be?
Oh, this is tricky. One principle, I think it would be openness. Openness to discuss, to find better ways to live together, to understand and defend your point, but also understand other people's points as well, to understand that humans are not the only living beings on Earth, that we also share it with many others. I think somehow, like openness.
That's really good. Anna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure hearing about you and all of your work.
Thank you very much, Mirelle. It was very nice to be part of your podcast.
So if people want to find out more information or get a hold of you, how would they do that?
They can get more information on the V2V Global Partnership website. It's v2vglobalpartnership.org. You can also contact me via email. It's acestevee at uwaterloo.ca.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at FisheriesPod, or by email at feedback@fisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app, or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly contribution to your Patreon or buy some awesome Fisheries Podcast logo shirts, hoodies, and stickers available on Teespring. I'm Mirella Lace. Thank you for listening to the episode number 139 of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, it is key to include fishers in the conversation about environmental governance, and in that way, help make small-scale fisheries viable for a sustainable future. Thank you.